All lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today to the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force call. We'll call the meeting to order, starting with roll call. Kim Kawamoto.
Here.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Andy Truscott. Not yet. Clem McDonald. Not yet. Cynthia Fisher.
Here.
David McCauley.
Here.
Good morning. Edward Jen.
Good morning.
Terry O'Malley.
Here.
Les Leonard. Not yet. Jack Poe. Not yet. Raj Watwani. Ram Sharam.
Here.
Ricky Bloomfield. Nope. Sasha Termot.
Here.
Scott Weingarten. Cheryl Turney. Tamer Burkowry. Tina Esposito. Valerie Gray. And Victor Lee.
I think Cheryl is on. I think she was just joining the call, but I see her on the panel. Cheryl is on, I think.
Great. Thank you, Ken. Okay, with that, I will turn it over to our co-chairs, Stephen Lane and Ken Kawamoto.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome back, and happy February. Hope everybody has gotten through the wild weather as best they can. I guess we were missing a number of people today, so hopefully they're all doing well. Ken is going to need to leave us a little early today for a conflicting meeting, so I'll be carrying the baton through the end of the meeting. We wanted to go over the agenda first. We're going to be reviewing the prioritization process that we've been going through and trying to make sure that we get all of the votes possible. There's a couple of people on the phone this morning that haven't had a chance to register their priorities, so we'll actually call you out, Arian and Ram, and ask you to provide that information here. So I hope I don't want to surprise you when we do that. And then we're just going to talk briefly about the priorities as they exist and how we think that they will orient our work going forward this year. We're then going to go back and pick up where we left off last time regarding the draft recommendations, regarding orders and results. We ran aground a bit on the issue of free of cost for access to data. So we'll pick up there. There have been some additional edits offered to the document. Victor Lee did a really nice job providing some granularity, and we got some additional input from one of the large vendors that we've included, and I hope that we can get through that before we go to public comments and adjourn. So that's the agenda as it stands. Anyone have any additions or questions regarding that? Or Ken, do you have anything to add?
No, that sounds good.
Great. All right. So we did do, you all recall that we've highlighted five potential areas of focus going forward: evidence-based disease management, social determinants of health, prior authorization, price transparency, and medication and pharmacy data exchange. And we spent some time going through those last time, and we invited everybody to establish or specify their highest first through third priorities based on the areas that they thought that they wanted to personally focus in on and where they thought we would have the greatest input. So 22 of our task force members have voted. One person voted only their first priority, though that person is not here, so we can't ask them to weigh in. We've got six people who have not voted at all, and two of you are on the phone. So I just wanted to invite Arian first. If you can offer up your first through third priorities, we will add them to the list and utilize that going forward.
So first of all, my apologies. I thought I went to the page, and maybe I just didn't hit save on the issues. But
that's fine. No problem.
Medication and pharmacy data exchange would be my number one. Evidence-based disease management would be number two. Prior auth would be my number three. Social determinants would be number four, and my number five would be transparency.
We're only asking you to go one through three, so
right.
We got you there.
Okay.
All right. And Ram, can I ask you?
Yeah, I'm sorry, viewer. This is Ram here. Just came back from this week from the federal government shutdown. So sorry we couldn't be here last time. Mine is the
same.
No
problem.
Medication and pharmacy data exchange as one. Evidence-based disease management, two. Prior authorization, three.
Very good. Thank you so much for that. And just to confirm, have we been joined by Tina, Valerie, Les, Raj, or Scott?
And Clem's here, too.
Hey, Clem. So glad you're here. We did get your vote, so that's great. All right. Well, then let me do this and see if I can share my screen. I'm trying to do this in a way that, there we go. It will give us all the meaningful data here. Good. All right. Let me try sharing here. See if we can do this successfully. All right. Please let me know when you can see my my screen here.
We see it. It's a little bit small, but we see it.
We see it.
Oh. Okay. So what we have here is the summary of the votes that we've received. So you can see here that medication and pharmacy data clearly tops the list as the highest priority for the group, with 9 people listing it as first, 11 as one or two, and 13 listing it at all, with a total score based on the math that Ken baked in, 53. Second in line is, again, evidence-based disease management, and you can see how that was voted and how that breaks down. And then things definitely cluster together down here with price transparency, prior auth, and social determinants in that order. So I think this is really helpful. You know, we did have a robust discussion about social determinants last time and learned that a lot of people are doing some great work on that. And that's already being supported by the ONC, so I suspect that this prioritization reflects the fact that that's being well addressed. We've also gotten some input from a number of folks, both on and off the task force, about the importance of prior auth and price transparency. And I think, Ken, you had a good way of thinking about how these would sort of link together, so maybe you can talk about that.
Yes, I think based on our voting, it's pretty clear medication pharmacy data exchange is number one. So that, I think, you know, unless there are objections, I think that's clearly the next topic to go after. And then it's actually Steve Posnack from ONC had the insight to say, at least the evidence-based disease management prior auth and price transparency are can be thought of as basically amalgamating data, communicating data, and providing guidance. So evidence-based disease management may say things like, A, you know, this patient really should, for their severity of COPD, you know, have a long-acting muscarinic agonist added. Prior auth may say things like, hey, you know, if you want to order this medication, then you need to make sure that these things are true about the patient. And price transparency may say something like, hey, if you want to order that medication, you know, this is what the patient's copay would be. And insurance will cover this one, but not that one, that kind of thing. So I thought that was a great insight that certainly the data elements involved are different, but the mechanisms used potentially to surface and provide this information are quite similar, so along the lines of the technology. So one potential thought is, you know, let's start with medication pharmacy, but for the next one, perhaps we can seek to combine those three, and then if we have time, we can also tackle social determinants and health after that.
This is Clem. Could I just comment on the medicine one? So the first slide you showed this morning had it at the bottom, so I don't know how that changed. And the second thing
Didn't have a what?
Well, you showed the initial slide, which I think some of the people who had voted earlier didn't have.
No, Clem, that initial slide was not in any rank order. They were listed for information.
Yes, okay. Well, the second thing is, of all the things that are working now, it's pharmacy. So e-prescribing is home free. So I don't know why that needs a lot more attention.
I think that some folks, and maybe the folks who voted it number one can comment, but I believe it was around things like getting dispense data. But maybe the folks who voted it a priority can comment on that.
Yeah, one of the things, Ken, that Clem, that I discussed last time was the issue around discrete SIGs the value that brings to providers and patients in terms of the ability to deliver medication-specific decision support and the ability to understand what narcotic dosing is being used, et cetera.
Well, I would disagree with that. It'll kill physicians because you can't put the common and let the pharmacist sort it out. Let them put it in his text. Let the pharmacist figure out how to do all that because it's just a small percentage of prescriptions, but it can be really burdensome to have to click to do a decreasing dose rather than just pick a menu that says it in text.
I think those are getting into discussions, but I think along these lines, there's also the issue that even when a clinician does initially select discrete SIGs, oftentimes in the process of going back and forth with pharmacy, for example, for refills, it gets converted into free text. So even though the clinician went through the effort of using structured, it gets lost during the transaction processes.
Well, I would argue physicians shouldn't be burdened with having to put it in discreetly.
So, Clem, I think that these will be good things to bring up. The purpose of this discussion is simply to clarify our priority. And clearly, the majority of the group feel that this is a first priority to work on.
This is Ram here.
Hi.
Hello. Yeah, actually, I voted one, but I agree with Clem after thinking about it, that a lot of this pharmacy things is kind of done reasonably well nowadays, although there are scope for improvement. There is a scope for improvement. So that needs to be discussed further, I guess.
One
is the medication and pharmacy, but I was a little bit, my apologies, because I was thinking that when you say ranked of importance, because that's, I misread the intention, that's all.
Ram, you're welcome to change your votes if you like.
I'll put probably
medication and pharmacy, go ahead.
I'll probably put evidence disease management as one. And then I will go for prior authorization as two and social determinants of health as three.
And then just as a note, I was interpreting this as medications and pharmacy, not medications and pharmacy. That is with a tight coupling or association between the two of them. So I was basing my vote on generally access to med lists and decision support about medications.
And I think that could certainly be included. Again, we're not gonna plumb the depths right here.
Yep.
We're just trying to clarify prioritization. So, do you want to make a change, Aaron?
No, I am. That was my interpretation, and I'm sticking with my voting.
Great. All right. We were trying not to spend too much time sort of calling out individual votes here, but just clarifying where the group is. So again, I think we have a pretty clear prioritization. Our plan is to do some planning and do our deeper dive starting on the 26th of February after we get through our hopeful finalization of our recommendations around orders and results, as well as the closed loop referrals and care coordination. So any other comments on the prioritization process or outcome?
I guess my question is, it'll be after medication and pharmacy, so it's going to be a little bit off, but does anybody have any particular objections to seeing if we can combine disease management, prior auth, and price transparency as at least in terms of like the general approach of, hey, we want to provide some guidance at the point of care?
This is David. There's a ton of activity in all these spaces already underway by appropriate standards bodies. I was thinking that maybe the committee's work would be to, you know, prioritize or vote in favor of the ones that we thought were most important. So I'm not sure that lumping them together will change much. I would think we're going to just find out what's going on in each of these domains and either support it or suggest that priorities be shifted elsewhere. So
I think that makes sense, David. I also think that we'll have the opportunity to highlight gaps where perhaps there is not enough focus presently and where the ONC could encourage further development or, as we've done before, harmonization or rationalization of competing programs.
Well,
I think that's a good plan.
I would support Ken's positions because we would get to those things sooner.
Great.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts? Good. All right. Let's proceed then. If we can, we'll shift now to further review of our orders and results draft recommendations. So I've just switched over. Can you all see our spreadsheet with those recommendations?
We can. It is a little bit small. Is it possible to hit the maximize button on your window? On the top right, the maximize button.
Does that help?
Yeah, that's a little bit better. It's still quite small on screen.
How about that?
I can read it. If anybody else cannot read it, I think they can try to maximize the screen or something.
We can open it directly on the Google page, right?
That's true. That's true.
Or on the right, you can zoom in.
How's that, Ken? Is that any better?
That's very good for me. But I'm nearsighted, so good for me.
Hopefully this will do the trick. Okay, good. Thanks, Clem. All right. So you'll recall last time we went through the first couple, and I accepted the changes that were there, so my intent was not to go through those again. This one here, this priority for all results being sent to clinicians, we did receive a comment toward the end of our discussion about whether device data should be included with the recommended and required metadata. So I added that just to be sure that people felt comfortable with that. Do we have any considerations or concerns about the way this has been incorporated into the recommendations?
So when you say device data, would that be like Fitbits and things like that, or are you talking about, you know, Holter monitors that are ordered and put on the patient?
Well, in this case, we're talking about the results sent to clinicians very specifically. So I think this would have to do with the devices that were used to generate those results.
Okay, I just would worry that it automatically includes everybody's body monitored things that the physician may not expect. So these will be ordered tests results, you're saying?
That's what this document is about. Whoever recommended this, can you comment? I believe that this had to do with the devices used for the generation of the results, and I can add that clarification.
I forget who put it in, but their comment was, well, you know, you may want to know that this was a Theranos device versus a Siemens device kind of notion. So that was their comment, that in those cases, like say the link code may not be sufficient.
Oh, okay.
Well, I was just going to say, would it be more clear to call it like resulting equipment or something that isn't device, since that has medical devices have so many other meanings?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, resulting equipment data.
If that was the intention, yeah.
Oh, data regarding device generated result, the equipment.
But just be aware, laboratories don't typically do that. now. I think it's a nice thing. I think there's probably a
right. That's why we listed it as consider.
Yeah.
All right. So if everyone's comfortable with that, we will finalize that change and move on. Okay. So now we're down to where we were before. And just to be clear, this has to do with making results available to patients and their proxies. I'm going to come over here so that we can see the comments. So you can see again, we've got subtractions in red, additions in green, and then we've got some comments over here, which is where we left off last time. Sasha had submitted a comment here, and it led us to suggest striking out this specific note here regarding augmenting program requirements to include receipt of information in either standardized structured formats, similar to API requirements. And I think the thought was, and we discussed this briefly, that it was hard to, or maybe, Sasha, I'll let you clarify your comment rather than try to state it myself.
Oh, I just wasn't sure what it meant to do that. And so I thought it should either be clarified or I didn't understand what it meant to augment program requirements to do that.
Yeah, I agree with it being unclear.
Well, given that it's a policy lever, I think it would probably have been talking about defining criteria for incentive programs, right?
Right. Yeah, that was the idea, was that we have a program today that says that patients need to be able to access their data via APIs. We do not have a similar policy requirement that says that patients need to be able to access their data via CCDA. So this was the suggestion was that if we have one, we should have the other. And that was the...
I guess that doesn't make sense to me, because aren't there policy requirements to require CCDA access in the view, download, transmit criterion and in the API criterion? Both of those also include a CCDA payload.
If that's the case, then this isn't required. So thanks for clarifying that, Sasha. I consider you a subject matter expert in that area. So that's great.
All right.
So we've struck that, and I'll make that official here. I'll take it out so it's not distracting us anymore. and then we got hung up on this notion of free of charge, and I've thought about this a lot since we met.
Hey, I remembered, Stephen, the comments that I was supposed to provide, and I just provided them via email. But again, my perspective is that OCR has already very well covered this ground, and I provided links to the relevant, pretty voluminous OCR guidance in this area. But it nets out to in the number one, patients have a right to access. Number two, patients have a right to request a form and format. Number three, if that form and format is readily available, it must be provided to the patient. And number four, the cost to provide access is limited to the actual direct costs incurred by the covered entity, and don't include, for example, covering the cost of capital for infrastructure and servers and that kind of thing. And when you add this all together, and again, this is well covered through both the access language and the FAQs on the access language, in the case where a covered entity has access to the API form and format, and the patient makes a request, which may be made electronically, for example, through an app, that covered entity is obligated to provide the specified form and format, and the costs, if any, that could be charged to the patient would be the actual direct costs, which would be really the marginal costs of electricity, which would be so close to zero as to be indistinguishable from zero. So that's the guidance that OCR has already provided under HIPAA and under their regulatory and statutory powers that lead to an in-the-world reflection of a policy mandate that API access be provided for free. It's possible that there are enforcement gaps, that there are provider organizations that aren't following the rules that have been established by OCR, the rules and guidance that have been established by OCR. In fact, it's probable. I know that the Karen Alliance is working on additional policy framework and enforcement language in this area. But I do think this is an area that's fairly well covered and where policy recommendations add up to what it is that we're looking for. So, and I dropped all the language in your email and sent it out.
Great. Thank you so much, Arianne. So I think that provides a nice backdrop for us completing our discussion of our recommendations. So I just want to make sure we'll just maybe go through these recommendations one by one. The first one was requiring that ordering providers make results available within a reasonable time frame and accounting for state laws as appropriate and the need for patients, for the provider to have time to review that. So made one little word change there. Does anyone have any concerns about this first recommendation? Great, we'll go ahead and go on. The next one, making all results that are in the EHR available to patients via the API, and initially we just said whether or not they are mapped to standard code sets. This was a point that Clem was making repeatedly, that we should at least make all the results available. Now here we introduce this free of charge concept, and it sounds like, Arianne, you're saying that a lot of this has already been covered, and there are some opportunities for some marginal costs to be charged, but it doesn't. One of the concerns that was raised last time is we don't want to disallow the opportunity for folks to provide value-added services if they're going to do that. The question here is whether this free of charge is needed here or as any value.
Yeah,
and David has his hands up.
David?
I mean, you finished your, I didn't mean to interrupt the sentence there, but I just wanted to clarify that when you say the word results, it's, you know, kind of a vague term that some people may mean to be more than just lab results. And the APIs that exist today don't necessarily cover everything that you might consider a result in the EHR. The expectation, of course, is that the set of APIs that are required for certification will be expanded over time through the US CDI. But I just wanted to point out that it's a little bit of ambiguous language here when you say all results. So maybe
I think we do mean all results. We have been very generic in our discussions, that we're talking about imaging results, we're talking about procedure results. I think that's intentional.
And I thought we did have recommendations to add textual reports and other kinds of reports to the list of reports available to the patient via APIs.
Right.
Yes.
And it's required by the law, you know, by the Cures Act.
And just note, Sasha has her hand up next.
It hasn't. I mean, I'm just again to clarify: we need the APIs in the first place, and that we don't have those yet. So.
Is that true?
Yes.
Their diagnostic reports are part of it. Are in an API?
And maybe just to keep the hand raising order, maybe Clem, you can go after Sasha. Sasha.
So I would agree with David's point that this would have to be contingent on API development being available for all types of results. But my concern was actually that we can't say all results here without the as allowed by state laws that we have in other bullets, because it would not be feasible to release things that are prohibited to be released electronically through state law.
Clem? Clem, did you have a follow-up comment too?
No, I think that we should, that's a very good qualification, but I should have an offline discussion, but I don't think the APIs are, everything probably isn't available as an API, but I don't think they're restricted to the laboratory right now.
David?
Well, I'm just wanted to finish the point that I think we need to connect this to other work underway that to expand the APIs through the US CDI proposal, which, you know, we're waiting for more details on what that means. But I don't think we want to, I think we'd like to endorse, we should endorse that that is the right approach, a staged, carefully, you know, piloted approach to expanding the scope of the domains that the APIs have access to, eventually leading to the full designated record set, which we're a long way from, long way away from. So I'm just saying, link it to the existing efforts underway and endorse those efforts.
So, David, what you're saying is put in and probably under recommendations too, like as, you know, through US CDI process or something like that, right? Like what you're saying is until we actually define them, it may be counterproductive for every vendor to have different ways of packaging all their data. And if you say all data, then it could get very voluminous because you could potentially even interpret that to mean like, I mean, that's a, yeah. Anyway, it does seem like specifying what we mean is good.
Yeah, so I think, I guess maybe a way to think of it is our recommendation stands as it's written, but then on the policy lever responsibility, we would encourage the, you know, aggressive pursuit of the US CDI staged approach to expansion of APIs to eventually cover all data, as required by the Cures Act, as Clem points out. The Cures Act is a statute, but we don't have regulatory language around what that means and how it's, and what at what pace it will be required and enforced.
And is it right, this free of charge via patients mean that, it, according to what Arian said as well, if a patient brings an app rather than a health system or a provider, that that access cannot result in a charge? Is that
Current. Interesting. That's current understanding. That's how most of us operate.
It's not how the world operates. That's what OCR specifies.
You know, for patient-facing APIs, not for release of information through your HIM department. You pay dearly for that still.
Okay. That's great.
So in terms of the language that I've added here, again, in green, just to be clear, David and others, are you comfortable with this as a policy lever, expanding the scope of API requirements to include access to all results through the US CDI process, to eventually include all data as required by the 21st Century Cures Act?
Yeah, I mean, there's a big debate about what all data means because Cures doesn't specify that. Some people think it's the equivalent to the designated record set of protected by HIPAA, which would be clinical and financial data, but not, for example, provider performance data, et cetera. So, there's a landmine there that's not well defined yet as to what all data means. But I would think, you know, all clinical data or clinical and financial data would be within the scope of what most people think will be eventually required. I haven't thought about it a whole lot recently. I may have missed recent trends.
Yes, I would agree with that, David.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are we comfortable leaving
that
free of charge in the recommendation as recommended last time and where we have that?
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Via APIs is, I think, fine.
For the APIs, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
The qualification of no codes, I don't disagree with as is stated, but if it tends to encompass everything, the users won't be able to, it won't go anywhere reasonably if there's some code to find its right home in the patient's GH. So I don't know how extensive that qualification will be, how much it flows into the other recommendations.
Clem, that was your recommendation, Clem, your point being that that we really needed to free all of the data, whether or not we've already mapped it, or whether or not the individual source has done the mapping.
Actually, I don't remember that, but I don't disapprove it. I just think that if it's kind of taken as send unidentified data except for the patient, it's going to be a shoebox. The patient won't be able to use very well. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think row 5, at least it's in the CCDA context, but it's There's been additions that maybe we can review a little bit later that get right at what you're saying, right? Like identify whether this is a lab versus a radiology or whatever.
Well, yeah, I think it needs a date too, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, that's in there. So let's go on. I really want to get through this one. We have a lot to cover here. The next one here, recommendation, is now, and at Sasha's suggestion, we change this to encourage and eventually require resulting agencies to make results available directly to patients. This could be encouraged by CLIA regulations as necessary. This could be required as a condition of payment for resulting agencies. So we hear again the question of free of charge, whether the resulting agency that has already been paid to perform the test, whether they should also be encouraged and potentially required to make those results available free of charge to the patient.
Well, the CLIA thing means lab, and that's already required, I think.
OCR did note that that HIPAA access, that labs are covered, when labs are covered entities, and they almost always are because they charge CMS, that access requirements already apply to them. What isn't there is the requirement that every lab host an API. So if you think about the two-part test that OCR established for free access, the access part's there, but the readily available form and format isn't.
So we did not specify in our recommendation that this was via an API. We are simply saying that the resulting agencies need to make the results available. So are we comfortable with this change as specified? Very good. We will.
This is Terry. Just do we need to specify either the format or the fact that it's, you know, standards based? You know, so they can make the results available on paper, but are we presuming this is electronic and that it meets minimum standards?
So you're suggesting adding the word making them available electronically. You're right. We're not.
Exactly.
What about using the same wording that's been used in other contexts for the providers?
Yeah, that makes sense.
What do you mean, Clem?
Well, I mean, there is a fixed text that's required in terms of the HIPAA thing. I thought it was like forming, you know, I think it says API. I don't know what it says. But we shouldn't be different for the result providers as we are to everyone else. And I think there are words out there that we could use, but I don't know what they are.
Well, this is kind of a big picture comment, right, especially as we get into medications as well of, you know, APIs are now required at the EHR level. Do we want to start including ancillary sort of aspects of healthcare and encourage or require that they make their data available through APIs as well?
I would if you think it's, if we physically can do it.
So do we want to introduce the concept that this is via APIs?
That'd be my hope.
I think that makes sense. I'm which line are we discussing? I've lost the context a little bit.
Sorry, we're discussing this encourage. This encourage line here.
I think the only question is, I mean, an EHR establishes a PHR relationship with patients and can do identity management. How is, for example, a lab going to know that the person trying to request it is, in fact, that patient? I guess they would have to go through some sort of a, like, how do they positively identify this is who you are or who you say you are?
This is a really good question that is probably outside of our scope.
Okay, any other changes to this one? The blue one?
Well, what we could say is that, I mean, just one more. So sometimes labs just get a specimen number. They don't know anything about the patient. So I think we could say something about if they have if there is an identity, qualify it, that is, if they know who the patient is, the patient could get the data, but that may destroy it. I don't know.
I mean, they know who the patient is. They had to have patient identity to do the test.
No, that's not true. That is not true. They'll send off
okay.
just the specimen number.
Okay. I'm not sure that level of granularity is going to add to this. But did we want to say via APIs? I want to be clear on that before we leave this.
I just don't like that.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's good, but should we weaken this a little bit to say and consider eventually requiring? I'm just afraid of saying eventually require it when we don't know whether it's even feasible to do this.
We know that LabCorp and Quest have already made their data available via API to patients. So we know it's feasible for the lab results. I guess the question is, you know, whether imaging and cardiopulmonary and other sorts of results, pathology, would also, this could be done. It's hard to imagine that it couldn't.
Well, how does LabCorp know who you are? I'm just wondering, like, how do you register to say, I am this person? I guess you, like, upload a...
I've done it. You go to their site.
Yeah, weirdly, they got to go submit claims and bill you. So at some point, they need to know who you are.
Okay. Well, if folks feel comfortable, this is reasonable. I'm okay with not weakening it.
I think that the clinical concerns you might have about bypassing the ordering clinician is, you know, whether the results will be understood in the context of what the clinician was working on. That's an old argument that may be seem patronizing to some. But it is the basis behind some of the state regulations around delays in releasing of results. So it's not totally clear to me that there's a net advantage of going directly to the source of the result as opposed to the ordering clinician.
Maybe should we just add that comma as allowed by state law?
Sure. I think that's fine.
And by specifying APIs, are you eliminating other possible mechanisms? Or is that...
I don't think we're saying you can't. We're just saying there's nothing that says you may not use another method of providing data. So I think this is just saying, we're basically saying, as a floor, you must provide API data.
Okay, I added the state laws. Okay, let's go on. The next recommendation was to, and again, we've added encourage and eventually require the use of standard patient-friendly order and result display names to the patient based on LOINC standards that are already being developed. And Sasha made the comment that she just wanted to add the encourage or suggest adoption. So we weakened that language a bit, but again, this is getting at the patient-friendly names. Any concerns about that?
Sounds okay.
Great. All right. And yeah, we do want to pick up the pace as best we can here. The next one is the recommendation to align state and federal policies to assure consistent and predictable data accessibility to patients, beginning with the development of a catalog of varying state and territorial requirements, followed by specification and promulgation of national standards to promote maximal data sharing with patients in both human and machine-readable formats. Any concerns about that? Great. All right. We got through that. I'm very, very excited by that. So I'm just going to standardize all that display, and we will move on. The next is an addition which came to us related to the practical experience of vendors that are trying to exchange this data, highlighting that there is currently no standard way to differentiate the type of result sent in a CCDA document. So this is CCDA specific as opposed to dealing with FHIR, but the recommendation is if CCDA specifications
or the observation still really is that the specifications could differentiate different types of results. Vendors could better integrate outside data into the chart and the specific recommendation to make an expansion in the CCDA standard in order to include result types and then the comment here that and this is really a question for those of you who know more about FHIR than I do is whether this is already included in the FHIR spec or whether it's worth identifying that as a potential need as well.
FHIR does have a type result type. I don't know that it's obligatory though at the present time. I think it's optional.
Okay. So we can say assure that the FHIR spec include and require the exchange of result type metadata.
Well, I mean, some of this is the kind of work best left to the low-level experts that understand the space as to what should be required or not. I'd be leery of getting that detailed in our recommendation here.
Yeah, US Core has categories of required item. So I don't think we need to touch this really in FHIR.
I mean,
all right.
What would happen is people would just have a type called unknown and you put in there unknown. So there's workarounds, but we're getting too detailed for our level of subject matter expertise, I think, here.
I think that's fair. So are we comfortable with this as it exists here?
I mean, my perspective is that if you properly identify at the granular level what the result is, you can infer the type from it pretty easily.
What we found is that that's not happening.
Well,
it's pretty junky now, so I don't know if we should take that as our guide. But Dave, he's right. I mean, if you've got an exact code for it, you can work it up to what it really is. I think the bigger problem with CCDA is the problem is there's no unique identifier for the district results. So you get six of them from different places. You don't know which is the same.
Yeah. So we've got that. We've got Clem, and we've got that in another spot.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I'm totally comfortable with the spirit of this. It's a level more detailed than that might be warranted by our level of research on the subject. But, you know,
I mean, I'll just
name so that people know what they are for sure. And if there's
so you comfortable? Does anyone object to including this in our recommendations as it stands here?
No.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm okay with it.
Great. Thank you so much. The next one is similar based on the observation. Again, maybe down in the weeds, but I think of real value. Is the notion that the results when they come in the CCDA, when they're exchanged between vendors, are not grouped by procedure. And that makes it difficult for receiving systems to be able to present those. So the suggestion that result components be sent grouped by procedure to keep the context together. Here again, rather down in the weeds, but something that is missing at this point.
I think that's not well stated.
What is
is this referring to like a CBC and its components or something else?
Yes, precisely.
But if there's
is
an
that
order,
usually considered a procedure?
Yeah, that's very ambiguous language.
Maybe it should be grouped by orderable item, by group by ordered item, or something like that.
It's a bad. I don't think I'd include it. We should start over. And what are we trying to do?
I believe what this is saying is don't send a sodium and a potassium and, you know, like a creatinine separately if it all came from a Chem7. I think that's what it's saying.
Yes.
Yeah, but what? But is that for human visibility or is that for computer use?
Yeah.
I'm assuming
it's really both.
I think it's off target. If it's coded right, you could put them all together anyway.
If you have a proper timestamp and the proper code, it shouldn't matter what else was drawn in the same tube, is what I think some of us would argue.
Yeah.
You know, it may be a deficit in your display system if it's not able to line things up properly by drawn type, drawn date and time. I'm not sure requiring that the way it was drawn or the way it was ordered is relevant to interpreting the results.
All right. Any other thoughts? Otherwise, we'll just remove this.
I can see how this could be useful. I mean, I don't know. I'm a little torn on it. Like, it, of course, you could recreate all this, but it'd be really easier, much easier if, like, the sending source did group it for you. You could always, it's easier to just walk through the components rather than to recreate the grouping.
But who are we serving? And who's reading CCDAs today?
Patients and providers.
Yeah, so the feedback comes from providers about studies that we've done with some of our users about how to make interoperable documents more useful. And certainly there's plenty you can do with date and time filtering, but that has not totally satisfied provider feedback in our experience. And they would like to see a grouping by how it was ordered for their own human interpretation. So I think if the group feels that this isn't a priority, obviously we're trying to put together priorities. I'm comfortable with removing it, focusing in other places. But the backdrop of this was provider feedback to improve usability. So that is maybe giving some background context.
Is the CDA permit the grouping and people just don't take advantage of it? Or is this a question of actually changing the CDA spec to permit the grouping?
So that's a great question, and we'd need a CDA expert. My impression is it permits but does not require it.
In which case, what we really, which would be my guess as well, and what we then are talking about is encouraging the groups that produce the CDA to preserve any grouping information they have.
If we specified it as orderable, yeah, in the orders, but I'm not sure the orders are put in the same place. Are they in CCDA? You start with an order.
No, orders are separate, but within the section on results, there's interest in, I guess, some amount of grouping by orders, which are actually in a separate section.
Yeah.
Well, this seems like we ought to get someone else should be deciding all this, I think. We don't know enough.
I think we would agree it's not a regulatory or a policy issue.
Okay, so it sounds like we have consensus that it doesn't really belong here. So I will, unless somebody objects, I'll take this one out.
The regulatory policy issue might be to, you know, recommend convening stakeholders using the CCDA data exchange to identify, you know, enhancements that should be made given that CCDA is going to stick around for a while. I mean, that could be the recommendation, right?
Yeah, and ONC is aggressively supporting improvements to the quality of CCDAs. And so I think that is an appropriate ONC activity, and it is underway. And HL7 and Commonwealth and Care Quality are all participating in that effort. It's at a higher level than this one. I think it's more focused on, you know, what kinds of clinical content should be in the CCDA, how should it be. What ties to encounters, what ties to current summary. There's a lot of work being done in that space already. But I think, you know, so maybe the policy thought here is just to encourage work to improve the readability and clinical content of the CCDA, like Ken just suggested, as a broad principle.
I like that.
That same thing could, I think, be the driver for what is in row 5 and potentially some of these other rows. A lot of them are aimed at that same goal of, in the current state, what are relatively small things that systems could do to improve the clinician experience or the patient experience.
So we want to improve the consistency and quality and readability of CCDAs.
Mm-hmm. Well, if these things will take 3 or 4 years, will it matter?
Clem, everything in this space takes 3 or 4 years.
No, that's my point. I mean, because something else might supplant it in that time frame.
Yeah, look at X12.
All right, so I've made some changes based on the comments that I've been hearing. Do we feel comfortable with this? Should we make these a priority two, perhaps? Would that be appropriate?
Yeah.
I like your language.
All right. Okay, so we'll move those down to priority two and leave them as specified here. We're comfortable with that. Great. All right. The next one was a priority two, and there was a suggestion to move it up to a priority one. The need for standard interoperable methodology to specify what has been ordered and what is the status of an order. And then we had some recommendations, one of which was advised to remove. So here we have all orderables. And requiring order status as a piece of metadata. Any concerns about this? There wasn't a lot of discussion, but we just wanted to finalize it.
Why did we take out the coding? Because, again, you're going to just get a pile of stuff you can't organize if you don't have a code on it.
I don't recall why that was advised to remove. We could certainly leave that in if
it's not very severe. It's priority orderables. Now, SNOMED results shouldn't be in order, so I don't know if the SNOMED is relevant there.
Can someone clarify or remind me what problem we were trying to solve with this one? Who is this targeted at? Who is consuming this?
Well, the problem is that you place an order in one system, and that the fact that an order has been placed or that an order is in a status of pending or in process, the status of the order, that information is not interoperable at the moment.
It is, though, isn't it? I mean, HL7 supports it.
Well, if I look across to another system, I don't know what orders have been placed. I only know what orders have been resulted.
Are we talking, Stephen, about labs in particular? Because I would think that some of the like upcoming procedure things would say that there is like a scheduled lab or a forthcoming procedure where the order was placed but it hasn't happened yet.
I think you're right. In some cases, you know, if someone's scheduled for a colonoscopy, that might be available. But the fact that somebody has, you know, already had a PET scan ordered or a set of labs have been ordered, this is what was raised, you know, when we went through this the first time. And Ken, I'm pretty sure you were part of bringing this forward.
Well, part of the problem is the provider doesn't know we should be looking for a result if he doesn't know what's ordered from another place.
Or doesn't know that someone else has already taken care of something.
But this is in the context of connecting to a system from the outside or something, because within the system, obviously, you see clearly what's been ordered.
Absolutely. No, this is about the interoperable nature of data regarding what has been ordered. And again, we had originally had this as a priority two. Someone suggested bumping it up to one. We could certainly leave it as a two. It sounds like it's a little bit more of future focus.
Yeah, I'm not clear what the gaps are here.
Well, I don't think the LOI standard has been strongly supported yet, right?
But LOI correct. Would not be used to look into another system.
Well, it has the content that could be delivered to somebody.
Right, and that can be done today. If you get an HL7 feed from another system, it absolutely can communicate, you know, ordered, pending review, you know, verified, corrected. Those statuses are all communicated with HL7. But you have to be a subscriber to the stream. This sounds
precisely.
Like querying in through APIs or something, in which case I think FHIR APIs would support this. I think. It just seems like a functional requirement, not a standards gap.
Well, I don't think you can find orders very easily from other systems at the present
time. Yeah, I don't either, David. I think this is, I have no way of getting this data today. Whether it's via a FHIR query, via a direct message, via, I mean, again, unless you have an established HL7 interface.
And it doesn't seem horrible to ask for it.
Yeah, but I think what's more of the gap is you don't have a good standard way to peek into another system and get the status of a patient in another system. I mean, in a real-time query into another system is not something that's widely supported. Right. I mean, people. We support APIs with finished products that are generated via messages that are sent out or CCDAs that are produced. The gap here is what's the way that you could peer into another system and see the chart in its live state. That's a much bigger problem than just seeing order status.
Yeah, but why are you against this one? It doesn't seem that offensive to me. It's a thing people.
Seems like a BB gun shooting at a random target. As a
clinician, David, I would disagree. As a clinician, this is important. It's important for me to know what has been ordered and pending in another system.
Yeah, I just think that there's a whole lot bigger gaps than this specific thing. So, you know, the ability to see into another system and see the complete status of the workup of a patient, which could include
but we're just talking about results and orders. That's the scope of these recommendations. So we're not going to try to boil the ocean. Do you object to including this as a second priority item?
No, not if no one else does. if I'm not expressing my concern, I'm fine to withdraw it. I mean, that's good. Let's go. Let's move on.
Anyone else? Great. All right. So I don't mean to be harsh. I want to get through our work. The next one was another suggestion, and this really relates to what we talked about above. And above, we were very clear to state that we wanted all of these results to be mapped to SNOMED, LOINC, et cetera. But what we've heard back again from some of the users and vendors is that that's not quite enough, that the current coding is not quite sufficient to get us to where we want to be, and that there are additional needs where we have these many-to-one and one-to-many relationships. So this is a general sort of a priority two suggestion to create a means of interpreting different codes and information available so that when received, they can be uniquely identified. This is adding a greater level of granularity than is today available through LOINC, SNOMED, CPT.
I think this is confused. CPT is clearly not always granular. LOINC, the criticism is that it's too granular. And SNOMED and LOINC work in different spaces. So unless this is someone wants to put them together in the same space, I think this is ill-defined. I mean, there's always criticisms that will apply in this space. But it'd be better. Who asks for it and we get a clearer, more specific thing that they're complaining about?
Yeah, so I've been involved in a lot of these discussions, and it really has to do with the ability to exchange data, you know, whether you're talking about within a single vendor system or across vendor systems. This has come up in the Care Quality Commonwealth context as well, that even if you have consistent LOINC and SNOMED coding of the results and the result components, that because of, as we've said, different methodologies, different machines, that you cannot consistently and uniquely identify which result components should map together. So this is simply an acknowledgement that granularity, you know, again, some people say things are too granular, but they still aren't, as they exist today, working to allow us to say that this serum sodium and this urine sodium, you know, are truly two different things, or this methodology, you know, that you might have organizations using the same LOINC and CPT codes to actually map two different things. And what we have today is a situation where you need individual laboratory and clinical subject matter experts holding things up and determining them. You can't fully rely on the current metadata.
Well, I think you could criticize any individual code, but CPT and LOINC shouldn't go together. They really have different purposes. if you look, I mean, there's three, you know, what if there's maybe 2,000 CPT lab codes, and you might have to put them in five times to represent one test. They're just not mixable. So I think that a criticism on LOINC would be fair, but I don't know how you mix CPT and LOINC. Or if you're trying to, you don't understand what they really say.
A good example on the CPT problem, Clem, is that in my organization, we might have four different MRIs that all map to the same CPT. That the CPT itself does not fully clarify the specificity of the ordered test.
Oh yeah, but the LOINC and RSNA codes are very granular.
Right.
CPT is just not going to cut it. Because
CPT is used to group them for billing. It's not group. I mean, it has no real clinical validity. Unfortunately, we're stuck with it in some cases.
Sasha, do you want to comment on this at all?
Yeah. So I have a suggestion. I think that the goal for this, the recommendation, in a sense, would be the same as the one we talked about earlier, which is ongoing work on improving the usability of current exchange. One of the weaknesses of current exchange today is that sometimes we use code sets which are non-equivalent at different healthcare organizations or insufficiently granular. There's, I think, a lot of opportunity for people who are deeper into exactly how to fix that than we are to discuss. But it does sound like, even from the comments we've just heard, that there's general consensus that there is a problem that affects the usability of order and result interoperability. It's just we're not in a position to clearly dictate what exactly the fix should be right now, and I don't think that's this group's role anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, this is David. My concern is that these code sets, certainly SNOMED and LOINC, are extremely granular, and the problem that we run into is how to actually lump them back together. How can you line them up on a flow sheet, for example, when they are coded with granular differences that may not be clinically relevant. The problem is they're relevant to somebody, to the pathologist, to the person that runs the lab. Somebody wants to see them separated, which is why they are highly granular LOINC codes. The difficulty is in grouping them back together. Now, CPT is a different problem because it's a grouper code set. Grouping for billing is not intended for granular clinical use. So I think this is it's a really tough space. It's not simply a question of they're not granular enough.
Well, I think what would really be helpful, so some of the critics are people who want something to happen which probably isn't physically possible. There should be some specific, you know, really some concrete specifics to make to fix it. I know there are problems. There are problems with LOINC. But it's not related to CPT.
I think there are problems in, I mean, each of these code sets has different problems, and to lump them together here is confusing. But, you know, CPT is a completely different set of problems than LOINC, which is a different set of problems from SNOMED, and the solutions are going to be very different in the three spaces. So I kind of agree with Sasha's high-level thought that these are all about improving readability and usability of the results. But the actions necessary are going to be quite different for each of these three domains.
But I don't need to get too fixated on the three examples that are listed. Those are ones that, you know, my coworkers had listed as particular examples, but it's not intended to imply that those have the same problems or that the fixes all have to be approached similarly or even that the problems are limited to those three code sets. So maybe we could just cut the ED and avoid some of the swirl that's coming from that and focus on the consensus I'm hearing that there are improvements to be gained from working on code sets in terms of, in some cases, making them more granular and able to be expressed, and in other cases, providing better mappings and consistency for clinician experience when the code sets are more granular.
It really helps us when you get feedback to get more specifics. Like mapping of what to what, and who, and what context. Because some of these things are very, very vague, and it's hard to deal with vague.
Clem, we have more specifics, and I just didn't think that in trying to summarize work that we've done for many years into a couple pages, but that was the right place. I mean, I don't think this group can solve it specifically. It has to go to other experts.
But the overall goal is readability and usability of the clinical information. So it should be codified at an appropriately granular level to be accurate, but also groupable for clinical readability. And those are both hard problems, a lot of work been done, a lot of work still needs to be done.
I agree with that.
So how do you feel about the way I've modified the text here?
I'm supportive.
Yep. Looks good.
Excellent. All right. Let's move on.
Yeah.
Sorry, Clem?
You're a magician.
I'm trying. Okay. Now I think we're getting toward the end here with very few changes in this one. Need for a standard methodology to integrate external decision support for clinicians, patients, and other stakeholders into the full range of order and results workflows. Pretty sure I think most of us agree on this. So some minor changes there in the wording. Support the advancement of the CDS hooks standard. Support the development of a hook that can be activated or utilized when a provider or patient receives and or is reviewing a result. Again, a pretty granular recommendation, but there it is. Support the development and use of standards to determine an exposed display net pricing. We'll obviously be coming back to this, and suggested alternative order information to relevant stakeholders, including ordering providers, clinical support staff, payers, and patients. So a lot there with regard to external decision support and how it integrates into the orders and results process. Any objections to the suggested changes?
Stephen, I would suggest, this is David, I would suggest that, you know, we standards such as CDS hooks, because I think there will be more than one way to do certain types of external decision support. For example, the prior authorization and the drug pricing may be done with discrete APIs through NCPDP rather than through something like CDS hooks. So that's
all right.
The point is that there's multiple standards here. You don't want any more than are necessary, but you might need more than just a single standard.
Yeah, I think the NCPDP thing is on its way.
Yeah, I mean it's in use today in the real world, you know, by Cerner and Epic and probably others.
So shall I say such as CDS hooks and NCPDP?
Yeah. I mean, it's the such as part.
Because NCPDP is very targeted to, it's very, very targeted. So it's not, they're not equivalent.
No, they're not equivalent. My point is that you may need more than one tool in your toolbox to solve this problem.
Right. Well, maybe the way you originally said it, as such as, instead, might be the right answer.
Yeah, I got that. Okay. How do you feel about the text we have here? You like it? Great.
Yeah.
All right. Next one.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, this one is there's a need for standards to support the integration of prior authorization into EHR-based ordering workflows.
Making CDS hooks and NCPT as they're like paired, they're not, the NCPT is a very hard-coded thing. It's not a general solution. So I don't like how it hints that it is.
Can you suggest alternate language?
Well, general standards such as CDS hook and specific. I don't know how to do it. Sorry. I don't know what you need to mention NCPDP in that context.
Well,
the
reason it's there, I think, is because of the net pricing and suggested alternative order information. You know, that kind of concreteness,
net
pricing is probably not going to be addressed uniquely by CDS hooks.
No, I like it. It's just it makes them sound like they're alternatives. They're not.
Well, okay. Again, I think we're getting a little deep. We're running short on time. I think right. I'll take it out, Clem. I don't think, you know, again, it's just a such as, so I don't want to upset anything. We've got a few more to go here. That's curious. I don't know. Oh, this is the one that that others have worked on. I am sensitive to the time. I think we are committed to open to public comment at this point. So let's do that and see if there is any. And if not, we will come back and keep going.
Okay. Thanks, Stephen. This looks like a good breaking point. So, operator, can we please open the line for public comment? Let me just take a couple of seconds here to pull up the phone number. And then while we're doing that, I just wanted to confirm, I saw that Les Leonard has joined us online, but have any other members joined us since the top of the call that did not acknowledge themselves? Okay, great.
Les, hopefully you'll still be here after public comment and we can ask you to provide your prioritization of our five topics.
Thank you. Okay, operator, can you please open the public line?
Yes, thank you. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. And I just wanted to mention, Les, are you on the audio by chance? Okay. If not, if you want to provide your prioritization, you can also do that in the comment feature. Operator, do we have any commenters in the queue at this time?
No commenters at this time.
Okay. I will give us back about 12 minutes or so to our co-chairs.
Great. Let's make full use of the time. If I can reshare my screen, I don't see the share your screen button. There we go. Thank you so much. I will go back to where we were and pick up where we left off, which is another recommendation or the observation that there is a need for standards to support the integration of prior authorization into EHR-based ordering workflows. Need for a standard methodology to integrate external decision support for clinicians, patients, and stakeholders into the full range of orders and results workflows. Sasha said, I agree there are multiple efforts underway. Not certain it's essential to standardize all of these use cases to a single approach. Reusing similar approach where useful certainly makes sense, but certain of these use cases might require unique approaches. It's a good point. So it may not be a single standard methodology that is needed. So perhaps we should expand that.
I think, yeah, the such as approach that we took above might be appropriate here. You know, appropriate standards as necessary to integrate or something like that. It will almost certainly be more than one.
Okay, so I just changed it to a plural. How do you feel about that? Standard methodologies.
Yeah.
So, well, Ken, what's your thought on that?
Ken may have had to leave.
Yes, Ken did have to leave. Unfortunately, okay. we're on our own here. Sasha, does that satisfy your concern?
It does. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Great. There was another suggestion that came from Epic. About provenance metadata. We had this, but I separated. We had provenance and reference IDs in one line, and I separated them into two for your consideration. So this is pretty much what we had before. We're not getting sufficient provenance metadata to understand the source of the data, and this was simply to say that that should be required. I think we're all aware that this has been added in the US CDI. Jack did include a comment, should the provenance data include device information? I think we did capture that above. So I think that was where this came from. So I think Jack handled that.
I think that the request in the first column is good. I think we've made it too complicated. It's really a unique instance identifier for the results, and it really screws things up that you don't have it. And it applies also to like prescriptions and things too. But I think it's gotten really big. I don't know if you have to say as much as we said, but again, I'm not good at refactoring.
So again, we're talking here about specifically about orders and results. And okay. We're talking about, and the recommendations are that provenance metadata should be required when these results are shared. And that's, I think that, again, that's already been suggested in USCDI, and that the provenance data inclusion should be independent of the transport mechanism. So does anyone object to the way that we have phrased this?
No. Well, I'm looking at, I guess I was looking at row 12. That's when I was complaining about that.
Okay. Well, we'll get there. We'll get there in a sec. That there, I separated out the reference IDs.
Okay. I'm
comfortable with
good.
Provenance. Okay, yeah. Good. So then reference IDs, again, made it into its own category because we added a little bit more detail here. Many vendors do not consistently send unique reference IDs for discrete results data. This makes it difficult to identify and accurately update data previously received. The recommendation then is that all systems, and again, we had this before, we've just fleshed this out a bit. All systems should generate, use, and send unique and consistent reference IDs. David, this was originally your idea for all orders, procedures, and result components. Require interoperability of the reference ID metadata with orders and results, such that receiving systems can recognize a specific order result as having been received previously. If the received data represents an update, the receiving system should be able to identify and addend the earlier version. Internal identifiers must not change over the life cycle of an order or result, and the internal identifier data should again be independent of the transport mechanism, as we noted above. So this is again, a slight expansion of David's original recommendation, and just want, since we hadn't considered this as a group, wanted to make sure that we didn't have any further input on this.
Well, it seems like bullets 2 and 3 are excessive, and they say the same thing. They're just explanatory, and I think it'll impede getting it done.
Yeah, I think to me that 11 and 12 are essentially the same.
Well, provenance and the discrete identifiers are really different things, which is why I separated them. You did have them together initially, David. So I appreciate that you think they're the same thing, but I don't. So that's why I just put them on two lines.
Well, I mean, provenance is a superset, and provenance would include the reference ID. I'm not sure what your point is, Stephen. What were you worried about?
I think of provenance as being really the source of the data. The reference ID being down in the weeds of the individual result and its stability over time. That's all.
Yeah, but provenance is not only the source. It would include the unique identifier, and to some people, it would include every person that has touched it or seen it along the way. It's a complex topic to define what provenance is, but I certainly think it would include reference IDs. I don't mind having these separate, but I think they are substantially saying the same thing.
Well, okay. My position was spin the item 12 to make it clear what's got to be done, and other things are just sort of reasons for doing it. And I think the other instance is a persistent ID, because people can always send another ID out each time they send it, but it's not what you want.
Right.
So that's that second sub-bullet, the internal identifiers must not change over the life cycle. That's the idea of the persistence.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And that's necessary for provenance tracking.
Yeah.
You need to know where it came from.
So, Clem, you were suggesting that the first sub-bullet, if received data represents an update, that's unnecessary. Is that your suggestion?
I think the next two, they're true. They're not wrong. It's just that it makes it too much to read to get to the point. And if you give the identifiers and freedom rights, you're saying the next two bullets explain why you'd like them, but I don't know if that's helpful.
So are you suggesting removing the red text here?
Well, I'm not sure. It was the one above.
That's just the first one.
Yeah. No, the first and second. You did the second and the third.
And Clem, I think these are just requirements that we're trying to solve for. These are problems that are trying to be addressed. And enumerating them or not, I don't really care. But
well, what happens is you get a big pile of text and people don't pay attention.
Oh, well. Okay. So I'll take out this red one here. Clem, is that your thought?
That'll simplify it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any objection to this as it stands?
No. It would be that's manna from heaven.
Okay. That's great. All right. Let's see. We've got a few more minutes. We may be able to get through one more. Oh, okay. So this is actually the big one where we got some very useful input from one of our task force members, which was really meant to simply clarify. So, Victor, are you still on the phone? Can you provide a little context here?
Yeah, I just wanted to flesh out some details around our recommendations. I agree with the problem in column B. And so the recommendations, I just wanted to add a little bit of meat on the bones. So,
but I don't think you changed the actual recommendations themselves so much as just providing the clarification, correct?
Right, because I think the original recommendations kind of had broad brushstrokes, and I feel like in some cases there are pretty good standards that we can use for orderables. Like for medication orders, I think RxNorm, you know, generally does a pretty good job, but where we're missing some standards are perhaps in medication order details. A lot of things aren't actually truly coded terminologies, and so it makes interoperability of that a little bit more challenging. Maybe, I don't know if it makes sense just to let the group kind of read what's on the screen rather than me just kind of insulting everyone's intelligence.
And it's hard to get it all on the screen. I'm going to see if I can shrink a little bit. We are almost at time, but I think we actually have a chance to get through this. So I'm just shrinking this down. Actually, you know, given the time, I think this is really just improved wording. So I doubt that we're going to have objections. If people are comfortable, I will wordsmith this we can send it around with the notes.
But just be aware, shrinking it down makes it invisible.
Okay, sorry about that, Clem. I don't know if that helps. There is one more in the last minute and a half. I want to see if we can just, this is another one that David suggested that I thought was quite useful. Results and other externally sourced observations may pass through many systems, including consumer and unregulated app vendor-controlled systems where tampering or other data modification may occur. The recommendation was to explore the value of digital signatures on appropriate order and result data that would allow the originating system to be confirmed and the values to be verified. Jack commented that he thought this was super important, and Tomer agreed. So again, we haven't talked about this in great detail, but wanted to give people a chance to say whether they're comfortable including this.
I like
any objections?
I think it's a go.
Hearing no objections, we will add that to the list. If everyone's comfortable, I will work with Victor to refine this language here, and we will consider this a wrap.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you all so much. We are going to be hosting, or Cerner will be hosting a face-to-face opportunity for us to get together at HIMSS next week. Thank you very much, David, for making that happen and others for supporting that. We will be meeting again as a group on the 19th in 2 weeks to do a similar freshening of our recommendations around closed loop referrals and care coordination. And then we will meet again on the 26th to jump in to the meds and pharmacy data domain.
Hey, Steve, if someone can't be at HIMSS, is that something really important to get on a conference call, or is it going to not deal with?
No, it's meant to be a meet and greet and a chat opportunity as opposed to a formal meeting of the task force.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for your participation. Great meeting.
Okay, thanks to you, everyone.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.